Welcome to the JP Morgan Weekender. I'm Bruce Kasman, and with me this week is Joe Lupton. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Papa Bear.
We're almost in April. Amazing. Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about the macro data on industry and CapEx, and then I want to talk perhaps a little more on some of these issues that are being raised on supply side performance. That's at least what I want to talk about. But let me start with you on the, because you've been obviously staying abreast of what's going on in the industrial data. We've got new kind of readings, thinking about the demand side, perhaps from the CapEx point of view, which I think is an interesting place to pay attention to. We've got profit numbers from the US today. These things kind of all bundle up into what I think is interesting. And generally, an upbeat signal. So why don't you kind of take us through that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think what we've been grappling a little bit with on the industry side is actual production data that looks to have lost a lot of steam at the start of the year, partly expected because we felt like there was going to be an inventory drag that was holding things down in a world where manufacturing had actually picked up and final sales slowed last quarter. So you had an inventory build, you're getting some payback for that. And that's playing out exactly as we had thought, but it's a somewhat of a concerning message. Now, the positive news is that we've been seeing final demand is actually starting to pick up a little bit. And importantly, the survey data has been picking up and kind of confirming that things are starting to turn a corner here. But it's the final demand side that we kind of ultimately will take our lead from. And here it's a little mixed because retail sales has been, I wouldn't say kind of weak, but well, I wouldn't say it's not contracting, but it's been a little bit on the soft side. And our car data for the US is looking better for March. So that'll be, we'll have to wait and see on that for March. But the news that
car
we're
data
tracking,
hasn't had a good run recently, has it?
No, it hasn't. But I think it's been picking up the underlying trend because you've been bouncing around. You had a lot of things in the US that have been, there's some seasonal distortion. So I actually think you're right. March will be a kind of a tell-all for how well it's been doing through the noise. So keep an eye on that. That's not out for another couple of weeks. But you asked about CapEx, and I think there, you know, similarly mixed, but I think that the net picture there is positive. So what would I point to is just in terms of tracking CapEx spending, you know, we look to the indicators of like capital goods, IP, capital goods exports, and things like this. The capital goods IP is actually still weak, but capital goods IP exports have really perked up, and also shipments out of the G3 have perked up. That's all encouraging. Our investment goods survey, the investment goods PMI also has been kind of hinting at picking up. And obviously next week we'll be getting the manufacturing PMIs, which overall have been improving. We'll look to the investment goods PMI to see if that continues to improve. But all of that is good. More fundamentally on CapEx, the reason I think I'm feeling better here is this kind of broader issue you want to turn to, and that is just income generation. The profit picture, which we had written about a couple of weeks ago, is showing surprising resilience through the end of last year, using our MSCI data, and a sense of resilience there. That really got a strong lift in the U.S. numbers. We're going to talk about in a little bit here, but if you put profits picking up, that really should lead to improved firming in business spending, both for hiring, but for CapEx as well. So if you've got CapEx lifting, maybe you've got some hint of the consumer doing better, which they should in a world where jobs are being generated. So I feel like that'll come into line. That'll pull your manufacturing numbers back up. So soft start to the year, but I think hints of things improving.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the other point to make in that context of what you're saying is we're also feeling like there's a little bit of a broadening in the base around the regional divergence, where the US was really the superstar last year in terms of generating demand, particularly on the consumer side. The consumer is probably cooling in the US, but we're looking for better news from the consumer and better news from the CapEx story, partly being reflective of the fact that growth outside the US and most notably in Western Europe does better
Yeah, I mean, I will say we don't want to just be pulled along by our nose with the story we're trying to tell, and we have to be grounded in some of the data. If Western Europe is a place where we're supposed to be seeing the consumer do better, and next week we'll get overall euro area retail sales, this week was not a good week for euro area spending because the German retail sales numbers really fell out of bed.
No,
And
I'm
big
not sure I
caveat,
bought.
we always fade those numbers and they always get revised up. But nonetheless, to be true to the data, that was not a good print.
I mean, I'm not a big I'm problem with European data is it's crappy and it's slow. It's like a lot of meals we eat. The food is crappy and the portions are too small.
Yeah,
But
when it confirms your prior, it's okay though, right?
no, on European retail sales, I pretty much just try to leave it aside. But so let's sort of make a connecting dot here. I think I want to start with the idea that, you know, both of us have been kind of moving more into a soft landing camp and moving away, boiling the frog kind of narrative as we've been kind of taking the assessment of risks here. But it's not because we're kind of losing the high for long perspective. You know, the inflation news, which we're not going to spend the time talking about this week, has been coming in on the sticky side. We'll have an important inflation number tomorrow. Unfortunately, you know, we won't be here in terms of talking about it. But inflation does look like it's sticky in the first quarter. The goods price stuff is firming. The service stuff is remaining sticky. And while central bankers are looking like they're starting, they're guiding towards the start of easing in June, they don't look to us, I think, like there's going to be a big easing cycle here, not from the big DEM central bank. So this high for long story is tracking, but the kind of damage that high for long was expected to do in well the damage that tightening was expected to do in 23 in terms of starting to erode underlying health, and the damage that high for long may do in 24 is being questioned here. I think that's really what's shifting in our thinking, and the profit part of it is one of the things. Profits just, you know, much exceeded our expectations last year, but also, you know, balance between profits and labor income, at least in the U.S., is pretty impressive. The financial conditions are better than we thought. Household wealth has been rising, so the starting point here is better, even though we've had meaningful monetary policy tightening. And now we're kind of addressing another part of this issue, which is whether or not the supply side story, particularly in the U.S., but not exclusively, is also going to deliver positive dividends here. I think what's unique about the U.S. is kind of two things right now. One is, in a world in which we thought the labor force was being boosted by immigration, we are getting now possible, you know, estimates coming in that are suggesting that maybe it's a magnitude more than we expected. The other thing is we've had some positive labor force news elsewhere in the developed market economies, Canada, Australia, even the euro area. But in those other countries, productivity has been, you know, extremely weak. The U.S. has had the best of both worlds with productivity growth and also labor supply. And I think, you know, in some ways, one of the interesting points here is that I think forecasters are starting to incorporate this in their labor market forecast. Next Friday's forecast by us, as well as the consensus, is for about a 200,000 gain and no drop in the unemployment rate. So, you know, you can kind of see that supply side shift both in the level of jobs that people are thinking is sustainable, but also the fact that we're not creating any labor market tightness from it. But, you know, I was just glancing at GDP forecasting. The blue chip consensus has still got for the four quarters of this year, 1.5, and that's pretty much where we are in our own house. So my point to you, kind of, I want to jump off on this, let you kind of speak on it, is that if we do believe these, you know, supply side influences on the labor market are meaningful, then we have to start rethinking a whole bunch of other things, which I don't think perhaps economists, if not market participants, have built in. And one of those things, of course, is GDP. Another one of those things is where neutral policy rates are. So I'll get off my soapbox here, let you kind of take it a
Yeah, I
little
mean,
bit.
I think the distinction, as you started, the distinction between the U.S. and elsewhere is striking, and I think we'll raise some very important tensions here and set the stage for potentially divergences in monetary policy paths, right? Because I think if we do get stronger growth in the U.S. because of stronger labor supply and stronger productivity, I think that continues to take pressure off inflation. And if you're kind of, if you're able to generate, you know, a supply side that is meeting the demand side of your economy, I think you're okay. And inflation comes down and you can tell a story at least that things will moderate, but, you know, still generate the strong growth you want, but still have moderation. Inflation comes back down. The Fed can start to cut rates. And yeah, maybe the terminal rate's higher in line with your sense of a neutral.
But I would take issue with that, Joe. I mean, I'm not convinced that the balance of the demand and supply is necessarily providing a clear signal on inflation. And I do think if you take the view that the U.S. is going to have stronger growth as a result of the supply side, which means both stronger demand and stronger supply, then I think, you know, as the Fed processes this, the strength of GDP growth, the strength of payroll growth is probably, until they feel pretty confident that the inflation news is coming down, it's going to slow them down. That's something you saw in Waller's speech this week. He was talking about certainly the two months of surprisingly high inflation news that made him question.
But I think what that's telling you is that supply isn't keeping up with demand. Right?
No. Look, you have a noisy inflation process. You got 2 months of surprising numbers after a number of months of better numbers. And he's basically musing on the uncertainties around it. And the point he's making is that as long as GDP growth is very strong, as long as labor markets are doing quite a bit, we have the time to be patient with it. There's no undue pressure to
really,
ease.
What really pushed him with that is he, unlike Powell, is given kind of some weight to the Jan-Feb surprise. I mean, I kind of stand by, and I think you agree, this kind of sufficiency condition that if we are running a run rate of 2.5% by the middle of the year on inflation, you know, they're going to feel like they're on the right track here. And I think that'll be the case if you're still running, you know, 150, 200,000 on jobs in a world where you're getting kind of this positive supply impulse. And they're going to say, well, yeah, as long as inflation's coming down, this is
right. But you're taking a very strong stand that you're saying that, you know, we came into this year without talking about big immigration stuff, thinking job growth was going to be 150. But if you're now lowering your inflation forecast without substantially raising your growth forecast, then you're biased in the way. See, my point here is there's three variables here. There's the labor market and realized supply. There's realized demand, which I think comes out when you look at your GDP performance. And then there's inflation. And I think, you know, I think what's straightforward here, if you believe this supply side stuff, is to say your supply and demand are going to be higher and your GDP growth is going to be higher. And probably your payroll growth profile is going to be higher.
And you're somewhat agnostic on what the inflation process is going to do here.
Right. So if I'm agnostic on inflation and I'm stronger on GDP and employment, I get less easing from the Fed on net, everything else equal.
Well, I mean, look, we're actually
if you want to go into the story that
says saying that you're going to look at what happens to inflation here, right? You're going to take your lead from inflation. I mean,
obvious. That's obvious.
I want to emphasize this. If we're at 2.5, you know, you're going to say, and I think Waller will say, oh, yeah, OK, we're making the progress that we want and we can start cutting here. Now, well, I think you and I are saying that right now, we don't know that there's still a tail that you need to worry about.
When you say 2.5, what do you mean? We're going to be probably at 2.5 on an OIA basis in June on the core PCE.
Yeah,
we're not going to be
like
there on CPI.
Sequential.
What are you talking
CPI,
about?
Sequential.
Over what horizon? Over what horizon?
On a 3-month basis by May. I'm not saying we're going to be there. I'm saying that's like, that to me would be enough for even a Waller to say, okay, we're on the right path here.
Well, that's what Waller said. I think what Waller said is that he wants at least 2 months to come after the February number of 0.2s. on core inflation. He's basically saying if he gets 0.3s, he's not happy. He's not voting for easing in
right.
there's three CPI reports up till June, although the
right.
one for June comes out at the day of the meeting.
I actually think the thing that Powell is going to regret doing by completely fading maybe I'm painting too harsh a picture, but by fading the January Feb is it really raises if you get one more surprising print on this, I think he's going to start to feel a little uncomfortable with having been a cavalier about the fading of
right.
it.
But we, my point here is we spent last week, and we probably spent 7 of the last 10 weeks talking about inflation and the profile here. My point here is that if we are together, and I'm not sure we're together, in the view that it's hard to know what the supply side stuff is going to do to inflation, because there's both supply and demand profiles, but we're pretty confident it's going to lead to a bias towards stronger growth and probably stronger payroll growth, then A, people's expectations, the consensus expectations are too low on growth for this year, and B, that by itself has some bias in terms of the way we think about the
right.
Fed reaction function.
Let's this out here a second, Bruce, because I think while you and I can debate this issue and the nuances around this issue for the U.S., I think the cleaner story, I think we'd probably both be in agreement that when you look outside the U.S., where you just don't have the supply side, but a case could be made that demand is going to be picking up here, that should be something that maybe keeps inflation a bit stickier. And
no, I would disagree with that. I'm not with you on that.
Or you would disagree.
Yeah, I mean, not look, I think it's fair to say that if we get a decent pickup in euro area growth, just like the stronger supply side story in the U.S., will have some impact on the Fed's reaction function, all things equal on the inflation front. I think that similarly slows the ECB down. If they're seeing growth picking up, and let's just say for argument's sake, we get something like 1.5% growth over the next few quarters. I agree with that. But what I'm suggesting is that inflation in the euro area has the lagged effect of what has been 4 years of underperformance. And I think by saying that the inflation picture is going to be dominated by the next couple of quarters of demand side performance relative to those 4 years of underperformance, I think is probably wrong. There's something in the oven, what I would suggest. There's a conflict.
Unlike in the U.S., where wages are clearly decelerating, even if not back as far, you're not seeing that type of deceleration in Europe.
That's right. So what I want to say, there's something in the oven in Europe which reflects both weak supply side performance and tight labor markets as a result of that, and as you're noting, high wage inflation, and a long period of very weak demand, particularly consumer demand, that's probably depressing pricing power. How that plays out is as uncertain as how the strong supply and strong demand plays out in the U.S. And I think what's in the oven on this is probably going to be more important for the next 6 or 9 months of inflation outcomes than whether the euro area grows at 0.5 or 1.5 over the next few quarters. I don't know how that's going to play out. I'm a little more biased towards the euro area being the country which gets the lower inflation outcome here, because I'm putting a bit more weight on the weak demand there, but I'm not sitting with a lot of conviction on that. And you know, I can go either way in US and euro relative performance here. I'm more inclined towards euro area underperforming on inflation relative to the US, but we'll see.
Underperforming meaning like what,
having lower
like
inflation over the next 12 months, having euro area have lower inflation than the US has. But it could go either way. I can see argument. All I'm trying to say is I think what's going to drive this is what's already happened in terms of the lagged effects of inflation from supply side performance and demand side performance over the last year or so.
I feel like you can push back on this, but I feel like you probably will. I feel like you're buying into the immigration story as something that's going to definitely continue here and be a strong influence for the next year here. Is that right?
I think so. I mean, I don't see a reason to expect. I mean, from what I've read, and I'm not following this, first of all, the numbers of the crossings at the border are higher today than they were a year ago. So like, at least for the first quarter, this stuff has not rolled over. Now there is issues that 2 years ago, we got a lot of people added onto the work permits for the asylum program. So there's probably some fading there, but I'm not sure how much weight to put on this immigration story. But I think if you want to put weight on it, if you think what happened in 22 into 23 was significant, I don't think it's falling off in 24. It might fall off in 25. Of course, we can talk about elections and what that does to immigration policy. But whatever's in that pipeline is not shutting off right now. I don't think so. So then we get into this issue of whether we're going to have another year where we underestimate the economy's performance on GDP, on payrolls. And then, of course, I'm not pushing hard one way or another. There's this ambiguity of how we think about it as a an inflation. As an inflation impulse, I would agree that it probably does benefit you in terms of having somewhat easier labor markets and perhaps a little bit more downward pressure on wages. But I think it creates tighter housing markets. It creates stronger pricing power in the economy more generally, probably puts more pressure on government finances to put more stimulus in the system. And then when you net all of that out, I'm just not as convinced. I have a strong bias one way or another on that. So anyway, I hope I'm not leaving you speechless there, Joe. Waiting for you to jump back at me.
I don't feel as strongly that you're going to get that type of inflationary impulse from it.
No, but from my point of view, what I'm doing in my own mind is I came into this year thinking the U.S. is going to grow 1.5 to 2. I'm now thinking the U.S. is probably going to grow more like 2.5, but I haven't changed my inflation forecast. So I'm giving myself an extra 0.5% growth, and I'm not giving myself any change in my, I think inflation's going to stick close to 3.
Right. I thought the argument you're making is that you want to push inflation up as well.
No, I want to, I'm not, what I'm saying is that's ambiguous to me, the impulse, but in my own mind, I'm willing to give the growth numbers room to run without putting extra pressure on inflation. But I think to me, the important thing is I don't think people have put in the growth numbers that they should if they think this stuff is meaningful. Maybe we're overestimating it, but if you think this stuff is meaningful, it's going to show up in demand. It's going to show up in GDP. If you're going to put 200,000 plus in your payroll numbers for this year, you should be putting over 2% GDP growth in your forecast for this year.
That's my simple point. We keep inching up to that in our forecast, right?
We're inching in the right direction. Let's quarter by quarter. let's have blessings where they should come. Let's say one more word about central banks elsewhere before we end. We obviously obsess too much over the Fed. I mean, one question is, can the BOJ stop or can Japan deal with currency weakness with any other way other than, you know, raising policy rates? I personally don't think so, ultimately, but what's your take on that?
That's right, Bruce. I mean, at least in Japan's case, I think you're getting pretty darn close of intervention starting to kick in here. And I know there's been this kind of potential shift in way to kind of talked a little bit about, you know, traditional monetary policies. If you're worried about FX weakness flowing through into your macro economy, you set rates accordingly, and that's your general tool. But I think there's sufficient discomfort that you could MOF intervention here is almost imminent. So I think you're not fully out of the woods on that, if that's what you're referring to.
Yeah, I think so too. But let me ask you one other thing. How worried are you? I mean, we're both talking to our commodity analysts, Natasha in particular. How worried are you that we're going to sit here in 2 months' time with oil above $100 a barrel and U.S. gasoline prices at five bucks a gallon or something like that? That could be a surprise.
There's a prospective thing, I actually think, and which is what you're asking me about. I think the retrospective thing is also worth noting, which is you've had a pretty big move in retail gasoline prices in the last month. I think that's going to continue to push up your headline inflation numbers, and that's going to be a headwind to the consumer here.
It probably already has been, as you're saying. I think it's one of the reasons we're downshifting into the start of the year, because this move really started at the beginning of the year. So, we'll see. As these things move pretty quickly.
I was looking at this week, it's not just Brent, it's your crack spread, which is your wholesale margin. And it's
my favorite topic, crack spreads.
Yeah, let's get into retail margins. Basically, it's about, of the retail gasoline price, I think looks like about half of it is from oil. The other half is between the wholesale and retail margins moving up. And so that's a headwind. Looking forward, $100 a barrel, this feels like, and this is the way Natasha was writing about it, like a bit of a political political run here.
Talking about the Russians wanting to influence the U.S. election through oil prices.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know about
that. Begs the question of SPR usage, and this becomes, which is certainly possible. SPR has kind of like been, you know, replenished, you know, from after drawing it down so much. So it's kind of, they replenished it fairly quickly. So SPR could easily offset that. Is it likely that, you know, the administration would start to tap that if it felt like there was undue influence of kind of Russian oil on the market? I guess so. Which case maybe there would be a cap at 100. I don't know where that would.
But you and I would both, let's kind of, you know, just make a basic point here. I would not put $100 oil prices in and then kind of push my core inflation forecast up. I'd be more inclined to have it be a growth drag, at least at the moment, because it does feel like it's supply driven. Are you kind of in the same?
Absolutely. Why would you think about pushing core up? I wouldn't do that.
Unless you thought it was a demand. Obviously, if you thought it was a demand,
right.
Signal of stronger demand.
You would start with, this is obviously
it's the identification issue, right?
Yeah, it's a pure supply shock. And so this would damp growth. It would take pressure off core while boosting headline inflation. Yeah.
Just why we should get that point across. We're not taking that the view that this is an inflation threat.
And therefore, which is the obvious implication, this doesn't go into the bucket of boil the frog, high for long type story. The central banks would look, not only look through the inflation consequence of this, but they would view it more of as a growth drag, which is probably taking pressure off their underlying inflation kind of trajectory.
Yeah. Okay. So let's leave it there. Actually, pretty interesting short week. And there's a lot we can continue to talk about on this supply-demand balance story, which I think is a pretty important one. And as you were noting, is quite distinct in terms of how you look at it in the U.S., Western Europe, and most elsewhere as well. But with that, I wish everybody a good long weekend, good holiday, and hope we can continue the conversation again next week on the Weekender. Take care.